Welcome to the Muscle Expert Podcast with Ben Pakulski, one of the world's top professional bodybuilders, an expert on human performance and mindset mastery. Ben dives deep to deliver the strategies of the top experts to upgrade your body, mind, muscle, strength, performance, biochemistry, and how to become the upgraded modern man. Join us on BenPakulski.com to learn the cutting-edge techniques to take control of your body, your brain, and create your greatest life.
Hey, what's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to the Muscle Expert Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Pakulski. And in the vein of trying to live your greatest life in your greatest body, one of the biggest deterrents or hindrances is estrogen. And we're all living in this massively estrogenic society where it's almost impossible, it seems, to avoid the massive amount of accumulation of estrogens in our environment, in our water, in our food supply. And it seems like we're fighting an uphill battle. And today we're going to do a deep dive with Dr. Anthony Jay, who's an expert worldwide on nutrition, on estrogen, xenoestrogens, and even get into a little bit of talking about epigenetics and DNA, which is super interesting. Dr. Jay is actually working at the Mayo Clinic right now doing research and doing some really, really interesting stuff. You're going to love this conversation. And the big takeaway for me was understanding that the level of xenoestrogens in our food, in our water, is probably about 100 times what it would naturally be in our body. And this is literally chemically castrating us. So listen to this episode with Dr. Anthony Jay all the way to the end and let me know what you think. And as always, live your greatest life in your greatest body. Enjoy the episode. Hey, I want to let you guys know about a special transformation contest going on right now. I want to give you the tools and skill set to transform your body and build your greatest body over the next 16 weeks. So I've put together a 16-week transformation challenge with winners every 4 weeks, the grand prize being cash and prizes from tons of different sponsors and the MI40 Nation. And I want you guys to sign up right now. And to incentivize you to get there, everyone who signs up over the next 48 hours is going to get a special document that I literally just finished yesterday on all of my transformation secrets, how to use the first phase of fat loss, the missing link in the first phase of fat loss, to really get your body burning fat like a well-oiled machine. So many of us live this stressed out reality where our bodies literally are working against us and burning fat seems like an impossibility. So I put together this 4-week plan for each of you, which includes a HIIT/steady state cardio plan. It also includes all these really, really simple, intricate tips to optimize your first month of fat burning, which is going to be the key to unlocking the body of your dreams. So if you want to sign up for that right now, you can click the link in the show notes, or you can check out bit.ly/MI40transformation. Again, that's bit.ly/MI40transformation. And again, check the link in the show notes. And anyone who signs up through that link, I'm going to give you guys these amazing two documents that I've just put together on the fat transformation missing link and the HIIT/steady state cardio plan for the first 30 days. Enjoy the podcast.
Hey, welcome to the Muscle Expert Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Pakulski. And today we're doing the estrogen deep dive because this is a massively misunderstood area. And I think everyone needs to understand this to start optimizing their body, optimizing their mind, their physiology. So Dr. Anthony Jay, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Truthfully grateful. You're one of the guys leading the conversation when it comes to understanding this, as well as a number of other topics around DNA and epigenetics. But to start the conversation, I'd love for you to guide our listeners down the path of what estrogen is and, most importantly, this life we're living of this constantly elevated xenoestrogens and how people can start to first remove the stimulus of elevated xenoestrogens and then second, what these things are actually doing inside their body.
Yeah, great question. These the xenoestrogens, I usually call them artificial estrogens, just so the layperson kind of gets it. But obviously, estrogen is a sex hormone, and it actually goes throughout your blood on the same protein that testosterone rides. I call it the sex hormone, like the limo service for the sex hormones. It's called SHBG, as I'm sure you know, and that's sex hormone binding globulin. So, these sex hormones, testosterone, estrogen, they're cruising around your blood because they float on water. And you know, that's one of their properties. It's called hydrophobic. They're afraid of water. So they actually store in your fat cells, number one, these xenoestrogens. But just thinking about natural estrogen for a minute, you know, it goes around your body and you've got estrogen receptors that pick it out, that pull it out all throughout your body. And that's one of the unique things about sex hormones is you've got these receptors all over. You know, like leptin or a lot of these other hormones, they only have receptors in real specific places in your body, like your pituitary gland or your thyroid gland or whatever. But the sex hormones all throughout your body. So if you start tinkering and tampering and disrupting, you know, your natural sex hormones, well, you're going to see a lot of problems, systemic problems. And you do, you know, you start talking about artificial estrogens, xenoestrogens, and that's what you see. You see a lot of health problems, and it's not localized to one specific area. And just to give you a relative number real quick, as a context, men have about 20 nanograms per liter of natural estrogen, 20. And you don't have to worry about the units, just 20. And the women, it's amazing, but they actually also have about 20 nanograms per liter, up to about 400, depending on the time of the month. So most people don't realize the range is actually more narrow. It's more similar than people think. So 20 to 400 for women, 20 for men. Now, when we're talking about these artificial estrogens, most of them, and we'll get into them as we go along, but you'll see most of them we're being exposed to in the thousands of nanograms per liter. Wow. And so we're obviously seeing physiological changes. Usually it takes years for the changes to come out. And that's one of the problems in research today. We're not doing studies that are, you know, over the course of generations. And that's where epigenetics comes in. I mean, it's a complicated topic, but, you know, just right off the bat, a lot of problems, a lot of issues throughout your whole body.
Yeah. What are some of the main implications of having elevated xenoestrogens? So, you know, a lot of people are misunderstood. And to be honest, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of great resources out there, at least to the public.
Yeah. Well, I wrote a book on it now, so it starts there, and it's directed for lay people to read. But yeah, I mean,
what's the name of the book?
Oh, it's called Estrogeneration.
Oh, right. Yes. Okay.
How estrogenics are making you fat, sick, and infertile. So estrogeneration, the reason I put that title, the reason I called it that is because we're passing, these are heritable health problems. We're changing the epigenetics and we're actually passing health problems to future generations that we didn't have to begin with. And again, that's probably, I'm jumping ahead of myself a little bit there, but the health problems we see, number one would be low testosterone. Right? Yeah. Directly, you immediately see that when you start being exposed. And I mean, as you know, Ben, you know, the testosterone in our country has just been declining and declining. And especially since the 90s, the 80s, you know, just crazy drops in testosterone. Almost like 100 nanograms per liter per year, you know, since the 80s, per decade.
Per decade.
But I mean, like it used to be about 500, then it was 400, then it's 300 is the average. And it's insane. And it's actually been declining a lot longer than that. But these really rapid declines have been coming on around the same time as these artificial estrogens have been just saturating our culture. And so that's one, dropping testosterone. Another big one is breast cancer. It's up 250% since 1980, you know, and I like to say, you know, dressing NFL players like newborn baby girls isn't the solution. You know, it's basically raising awareness isn't really going to solve the problem. It's these artificial estrogens. So, you know, that's where we need to focus our energy and you need to be avoiding these chemicals. So breast cancer, I mean, there's a bunch of them, right? Fat gains, basically. The way to think about it is imagine that you're telling your body you're pregnant, you know? So when a woman is pregnant, her body stores more fat, right? Because our ancestors didn't always have access to food. Fat is the most efficient storage form of energy. And so if you didn't have nutrients, the baby needs energy, it burns fat. So you store more fat when you're pregnant. So what do these artificial estrogens do? They cause your body to think it's pregnant. You store more fat. You develop breast tissue, right? AKA breast cancer. You mess with your immune system because the natural estrogen, scientists call it immunostimulative and immunosuppressive, which obviously doesn't make sense.
Right.
Because you're stimulating, you're amping up your immune system and you're suppressing it. But that's just what we find. That's just what natural estrogen does because you can't destroy the fetus when you're pregnant. So you have to suppress the immune system, but you also have to fight disease better than ever. So you have to amplify the immune system. So there's these weird things, and these artificial estrogens, you know, they mess up your immune system. So they screw up all these natural functions, and you see the rises in those health problems in our society.
Now, are the main contributors to estrogen predominantly plastics and herbicides, pesticides?
Yeah. Except I would add the personal care products, like the phthalates, people rubbing them on their skin, the parabens, the benzophenones, those three. So what I did in my book is I made a top 10 list, and I just try to simplify it for people because there's so many of them. You know, Agent Orange acts like it can disrupt your estrogen system, but obviously we're not exposed to Agent Orange every day. Mm-hmm. And just as an aside, right? Like that's one of the reasons we didn't immediately know Agent Orange was so bad is because these things take years, decades to come out as health problems. Sometimes you have to wait till the next generation to see the health problems, like diethylstilbestrol is a drug they used to prescribe. That one is a perfect example of that. You know, doctors were professionally prescribing it, and then oops, you know, these babies are coming out. And then the health problems are showing up. So yeah, the personal care products. So what I did is I made a top 10 list and kind of categorized the ones we're exposed to every day.
Yep.
And that's how I simplify it.
Now, the first thing that comes to mind is obviously glyphosate and you know, just the almost unavoidable exposure in the US. Is that, in your opinion, the biggest culprit? And is that something we can even avoid if we wanted to?
Yeah, I mean, at least with glyphosate, people are aware that it's an issue in terms of your gut bacteria. And now the studies are coming out that it's showing it's estrogenic. I mean, yeah, you have to buy organic foods, especially grains. But the bigger one that most people don't know about is atrazine. And that's a lot more estrogenic than glyphosate. And atrazine is the second most used herbicide. So glyphosate, Roundup, is the number one most used herbicide in North America. Number two is atrazine. And going back to those numbers from before, so 200 nanograms per liter of atrazine literally changes male frogs into female frogs. So they call it feminization. And a lot of scientists just call it reproductive abnormalities or whatever, but to just try and be political. But frankly, you know, these chemicals feminize males, including the brain. They drop your motivation. You know, it just has this systemic impact. But I think atrazine is way overlooked because it's a lot more potent as an estrogen, and it's illegal in Europe because of that. And here it is all.
And it's still legal.
Yep.
Still legal in the US.
Yep. And it's found in the drinking water. The legal allowable limit is 3,000 nanograms per liter.
And you said 200 nanograms per liter was feminizing?
Changes the frogs. Yep.
Wow.
And I mean, again, men have 20, right? 20 nanograms per liter of natural estrogen. And this stuff goes through your gut. You know, your gut's only one cell thick, you know?
So, you know, walking down the path of, this isn't exactly where I wanted to go in the beginning of the podcast, but it seems like we're segueing there. How do we start avoiding this stuff? Like, and do we stand a chance? Is there any way for a human being who lives in the United States of America or North America, for that matter, I guess, to start avoiding the over-estrogenation of, to use your term, estrogeneration of our race?
Yeah, you definitely can. There's a scientist, his name is Michael Skinner. He discovered transgenerational epigenetic inheritance, which is a crazy mouthful of words, but it basically means you pass disease on to future generations from your current exposures. He gave a TED talk, everything. I sat down with him, had lunch at the Mayo Clinic with him, and he was really depressive about this, you know, not optimistic. He was basically saying we're screwed, we're exposed to all these chemicals, we're going to have future impacts. And that's just the way it is. But then the funny thing was, as I was eating lunch with him, his daughter is pregnant, and he bought a whole house filtration system for his daughter. And it's like, well, you know, you're trying, you're doing stuff. And that's what you got to do, you know, like with the grains, you've got to be careful because that's where they put the atrazine, you know? And as we go through the list, you know, mycoestrogen is number two on my top 10 list. That's mold estrogen. So mold literally secretes an estrogen compound. It's called zearalenone. That's ZEA, zearalenone. And that's another one. You find it in grains like crazy in America because they don't even regulate that one. And that's a big, compare and contrast. In early part of my book, I compared Europe versus America. And it's so obvious that we're just dropping the ball in America. So as Americans, and honestly, Canada, a little bit better, but not much. And, you know, we've got to basically be proactive ourselves. We've got to be vigilant in our own lives and just, you know, not assume the government's going to take care of us on these chemicals.
Do you feel that once you've accumulated an excessive amount of xenoestrogens and toxic estrogens in your body, that there is some strategy to start pulling them out of your body? Or is it just one removing the stimulus, but is there any known strategies to start, detoxing estrogens?
Yeah, for sure. The best way is the sauna, 100%. Yeah. I mean, exercise works and helps. You know, the average lifespan of a fat cell is 1.5 years. They've done studies and they found fat cells literally up to 10 years old. But again, the average fat cell, 1.5 years, and these chemicals, they float on water. You know, they love storing in fat. And the ironic thing, I call it the estrogenic paradox, is they store in fat and they signal your cells to hold on to fat, right? Mm-hmm. To make more fat, to store more. So they're sitting there, they're telling the cells to make more fat, you know, store more fat. So it's a vicious cycle. You've got to get out of it. And the best way to do it is the sauna, because it speeds up molecular motion. And they've done patch testing where they put like a nicotine patch without the nicotine on people's skin. And they have groups of people sitting in saunas, groups of people that aren't sitting in saunas. And it's amazing how much BPA and phthalates and these other estrogen chemicals you sweat out. Mm-hmm. So it's super effective. Some people talk about charcoal pills and things like that, but not nearly as effective. I mean, that's pretty effective for stuff that happens to be in your intestine right now. But I think sauna is the way to go, 3 times a week.
So a lot of men are using hormone replacement therapy, jacking up the testosterone levels, and often experiencing elevated estrogen levels as a result. How would those two things interact and differ as far as the xenoestrogens and the naturally produced estradiol?
Yep. Right. Yeah, testosterone obviously can be converted to estrogen. I mean, you know, you probably should use an aromatase inhibitor to keep that from, you know, overwhelming your system. But these artificial estrogens are definitely going to contribute and make that effect worse. And more importantly, there's a gene, it's called CYP1B1. And, you know, all these genes, they have these weird shortcut names. CYP1B1, that's the biggest gene that breaks down estrogen. Basically helps your body to get rid of estrogen. Mm-hmm. And about 10% of people that I do consulting for, they have a problem with their CYP1 gene or their 1B1. That's a liver enzyme. It's a cytochrome P450 enzyme. It's involved in detoxing estrogen, getting rid of estrogen. And man, those people, I mean, I was literally just talking to somebody yesterday with this issue and they always struggle, you know, especially at the later ages, 40, 50, 60 years old. They're having problems with estrogen, the gynecomastia, the man boobs, you know, the same types of problems you see with the artificial estrogens. And how much of it is attributed to natural estrogen staying in the body longer or these artificial estrogens staying in the body longer? I don't know, you know, but it's definitely neither of them are optimal.
I love that there's such an awareness coming up around this now, because I say that all the time and people talk about, you know, their genetic ability to build muscle, their genetic ability to lose fat. And now we're actually getting some reasons as to what these things are. Like you look at somebody who goes, well, that guy can eat whatever he wants and he's always shredded. Yep. It's just, you know, quote unquote genetics, but it's often just these simple pathways, like either they detox estrogens well or inflammation well, or maybe they use insulin well. Yep. It's great that you're diving into these areas because, you know, it's demystifying all this bro science.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's what it comes down to. People get almost religious about their diet. You know, like, oh, I'm a vegan and that's what works for me, so that must be what works for everybody else. Or I'm a carnivore. And I see people, like, no question, I see people that are genetically disposed to having an advantage if they're a carnivore, like doing the carnivore thing. But man, that's not very common, frankly. And I see people that have a great genetic advantage for eating a lot of carbs, you know, and maybe even eating a keto diet, right? Like I see those people and when I'm doing DNA consulting and, you know, I mean, but the problem is when people extrapolate and they try and say everybody should be on a keto diet or whatever diet because it works for them in their situation.
Hey, hey, ladies and gents, I interrupt this podcast to bring you a special message from ATP Labs. And to talk about estrogen with Dr. Anthony J has been an incredible opportunity. And one of the things he brings up in this episode is how to supplementally remove estrogens, or at least support estrogen detox, as well as support the epigenetic expression of your genes. So one of the ingredients Dr. J mentions is sulforaphane, and it's definitely one of my favorite ingredients that I've used pretty religiously for the better part of about 7 years as a professional bodybuilder, along with something like called calcium deglucurate, resveratrol. I've also used DIM, which Dr. J says is not the best ingredient, but I've used it with relative success. And ATP Labs makes an amazing product that you're going to love called Estro Control. And you guys can get 10% off Estro Control at atplab.com using the code BEN10. Again, it's got all these ingredients in efficaciously dosed amounts. And it's easy because it's all in one. And it's got this amazing pink label, which you guys are going to love. But don't be afraid, guys, because it's not just for women. I use this myself and I use it cyclically. So I'll probably use it for 3 weeks at a time before I take, a month or so off. And when I'm taking these high amounts of estrogen detox support, I'm also making sure I'm getting in the sauna 2 to 3 times a week. I'm also making sure I'm getting extra increased fiber, which can come in the form of increased vegetables, can also come in the form of a fiber supplement, which I often take, particularly in times of focusing on, getting rid of the accumulation of toxins. So, this whole detoxing thing is one of those controversial topics. But the reality is, to get rid of a toxin, you have to first remove the stimulus, as Dr. J talks about. And so to remove the stimulus or remove the estrogens, it just is a matter of paying attention to what you're putting into your body and secondarily supporting excretion, which looks like additional water, additional fiber, and things like brocophane and Estro Control from ATP Labs. So enjoy the rest of the episode. And if you want to check out atplab.com, use the code BEN10 to get your 10% off Estro Control. Enjoy the show. Are there a lot of genes that would be indicative of giving someone an indication as to what type of gene what type of diet they would want to follow? Or is it like a very narrow spectrum of things that you can kind of identify pretty quickly?
Yeah, there's a lot of genes you have to kind of factor in the big picture. How long certain things are staying in the body, how much you're breaking down other things, how optimal, your all these different metabolic pathways. But the biggest problem, honestly, is the way we're researching in America, assuming that fats are bad, assuming cholesterol is bad, and studying people with just calorie counting. So, a lot of the research just has been completely off the mark. I mean, I used to do rabbit research. My PhD was in lipids and hormones and fats, but we used to use rabbits as a plaque model, and actually we would create plaques in rabbits and then give them drugs and try and mitigate the plaques. But we would feed the rabbits cholesterol, which is insane, right? Because rabbits eat grass and they still wouldn't get plaque. We'd give them a ton of cholesterol. They still wouldn't get plaque. So then we'd have to go in there and give them snake viper venom and a balloon catheter and give them injuries in their arteries. And I mean, just insanity, right? And then we say in our research papers, we're studying, people that are doing these kind of studies, they talk about how they're studying diet, so you have to sift through a lot of that to get to what's really going on. But at least the metabolic pathways are pretty well established. And from that perspective, you can do a lot to unravel optimal performance.
How are elevated estrogens affecting the brain?
The number one way is depression, male and female, children, everything. So like, for example, when BPA in the urine, and by the way, BPA, I keep bringing it up, but the reason it's bad, it acts like estrogen in your body. And it's amazing how many people don't know that. Everybody's talking BPA free and how they want BPA free bottles, but they don't even know why. And that's it right there. Boom. So BPA acts like estrogen as it goes up. And they did a study with children that have higher levels of BPA in their urine and found massive increases in depression in those children compared to children with low levels of BPA. So, and that's really common. I mean, you go through the list, talk about atrazine and you look at depression, right? Like India, the farmers in India, as they started using atrazine, the depression just skyrocketed. I mean, it's insanely high. And nobody wants to blame atrazine because there's these big companies, there's a lot of money involved, it's production farming now. And again, go on down the list, right? Like all these estrogens, just check depression, you go down the list. Again, motivation, I mentioned before, that drops with these artificial estrogens, at least in males. But those are the big ones. I think that as far as I know and as far as research has found, I think depression is the biggest issue, and maybe motivation is the second.
Very, very interesting. Now, talking about DNA epigenetics with relation to estrogen, is this something you can definitively look at someone's 23andMe report and go, hey, here's how you detox estrogens and here's what you should do to support that?
Yeah, that's what I try and do. I mean, there's always this balance. And the reason I'm writing two books right now, one on DNA and then one on epigenetics, mm-hmm. is because you can't really separate those two things. Yeah. So basically, you know, if you've got a messed up gene, like if you've got an enzyme that's not clearing estrogen in your liver, you're going to have higher levels of estrogen. That gene is always going to make a faulty enzyme. It's always going to make a problematic protein. And that's just bad genetics. But sometimes if you mess up your epigenetics, then you just make less of that protein and then you clear less estrogen. So you have the same effect from the epigenetics, but it's a different pathway, right? It's a different means. If that makes sense.
Yep.
But the beauty of epigenetics is that you can change it. You know, you can change it through heavy lifting. You can change it by balancing your hormones. These hormones act right on your DNA. They literally, like the estrogen and testosterone, they literally directly bind. Well, then once they bind a receptor, they directly bind DNA. So they alter these epigenetic changes. And by the way, epigenetics, that means marks on DNA. Mm-hmm. And I know you know that. I'm just kind of saying it for your audience because, you know, it's really simple. It's like musical notes. You know, if you've got black dots on a line, those simple black dots, maybe say Mary had a little lamb, like dit, 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 Mary had a little lamb. That's your DNA. You pass that to somebody else, song stays the same. But if you add chords on top of that, that's your epigenetics. You know, it's more complex. You can still pass that on to somebody, but you can change it and pass it on, make it better, make it worse. And the DNA underneath that stays the same, but those marks can change. And these hormones definitely change the marks.
Interesting. What testing recommendations do you have? Obviously, the DNA testing is one thing, but as far as if I wanted to have my BPA tested or the presence of estrogen tested or phthalates, things like that, is there some recommended testing, or is that something you can get at your doctor, or do you have a particular lab that you use?
No, you can't really. I mean, you can do it in the lab, but it literally costs as much to just buy a whole house filter for your house, you know? To get your BPA levels tested. And that's not even counting your parabens or your phthalates or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Your birth control levels from your drinking water. So honestly, I think it's better to just assume that the levels are there, you know, in the plastic bottles, in the drinking water, and the studies show it. So in the lab, we can show that, you know, and even BPA free, I think, is a huge problem. And people are completely missing the ball on this, including a lot of scientists, not most, but, you know, these phthalates are just as estrogenic, if not more, than BPA. Mm-hmm. So BPA free, you know, usually that just means plastic number one, which is polyethylene terephthalate. And these and look on the recycling symbol. If you don't believe me, you know, look, there's a little recycling symbol. Let's say number one, and that's polyethylene terephthalate. And man, those things are nasty. Like, it's amazing the repercussions, you know, your health you have with your health when you're exposed to phthalates. So honestly, again, you could measure them. It would be thousands of dollars. It would be in a lab. It would be customized testing. There's plenty of studies that do that. But in terms of a high throughput testing, you know, like through your conventional doctor, they're not going to do it. You just have to look at your testosterone if you want to track this.
I'd love to give our listeners great takeaways. So the first thing that comes to mind is you mentioned Dr. Skinner put a full house water filter on his house. And is that something you do as well?
I'm in the process of doing that. Actually, I'm running my water softener. And after that, I'm running, because in Minnesota here, we've got pretty hard water. And then I'm running that to the toilet and things. But then I'm running the rest, like the shower water and the drinking water, into a charcoal filter. It's like a big charcoal tank. It's $1,000. But I mean, the low hanging fruit is to just filter it with some kind of filter and not store it in plastic. You know, even at room temp, you're going to have a lot of leaching.
Yeah.
And there's no reason to kind of dance with the devil on that. You just put it in a glass pitcher, you know.
And what type of filter are you using?
Anything with activated charcoal, you know.
Okay.
I honestly don't care. I mean, personally, I use a Berkey filter. It's stainless steel. I buy a stainless steel spigot on that. But that's pretty, you know, it's pretty crunchy, as they say. And it's, you don't need to, you can use Brita, you can use pure. And you know, if you're going to, like, I, what I do with the water in the car is I store San Pellegrino bottles,
yep,
like a 24 pack of those. I refill them. If I'm hiking or something, I use stainless steel. It's pretty simple, you know, it's not rocket science. And I think it's better for the environment too, if you want to go that route.
Absolutely. The idea of reusing bottles seems like, you know, it's beyond the scope of what most people do. We're so accustomed to using the plastics. Yeah, that was my next question. You know, if we're obviously drinking water is probably step one because we consume so much of it. Step two, obviously, maybe reducing plastics, reducing, you know, makeup and other
personal care issues,
personal care products. Yeah. Anything else that stands out in your mind as far as allowing people to start removing these stressors, first of all?
Oh, for sure. Well, actually, PEX piping is a lot worse than I originally thought. When I didn't even write anything about it in my book, but these most homes now, most new homes are switching over to PEX pipe instead of copper because it's cheap. And I just did a YouTube video on this because I wanted to know personally. I had people asking me, what about PEX pipe? Does it have phthalates? Does it have BPA? Sure enough, it's over 1,000 nanograms per liter of phthalates. And it's not time dependent. So like whether the water sits in those pipes for 4 hours or 8 hours or 2 hours, whatever, it's all above 1,000 nanograms per liter of phthalates. Mm-hmm. And just another, you know, reason you should at least filter it coming off the tap. But I mean, there's a lot of things, grains, right? Like we talked about mold estrogen, you got to at least get organic grains. And even those, sometimes they're stored now and they're more and more stored in mass facilities. And in Europe, they literally regulate zearalenone, the mold estrogen. And again, molds secrete estrogens. And they've actually patented some of those chemicals. They've kind of changed the chemistry slightly and then made patents because they use them in farm animals to make them bigger and things. Now that's illegal, but you know, they still sneak it in once in a while, it makes the news, or they, you know, they certainly used to use those. But you've got to be careful. I think with the grains, you know, if you're estrogen sensitive, I tell people to just avoid grains, depending on their genetics. Red number 40 makes my top 10 list, or the artificial red dyes. The chemistry on those chemicals, really similar to estrogen. There's plenty of studies that support that. So avoid red Powerades and things like that, you know. In Europe, it's not illegal to use red 40, but you have to put a warning label on your food that says may cause health problems. So nobody uses it. They use red beet juice, you know.
Right.
And over here, it's all over the place, right? You see it in the salmon. They put it in, you go buy farm-raised salmon and they got red 40 in it. You know, they hide
really?
Yeah, the salad dressings, they're putting it. I mean, once you start watching out, you know. You find it, and like you said, the personal care products, I haven't even circled back to those because, you know, people overlook the laundry detergent for one, and that stuff sticks in your clothes. It prefers to stay on your clothing instead of going in the water. Mm-hmm. And they've tested blood levels, and I literally will do a video on this, you know, soon, probably in the next couple of weeks, next week or two, because, you know, there's a chemical called benzophenone that they're putting in there. And that's the same chemical as you find in the sunscreens. So you got to watch out for sunscreens too. That's another one of my top 10 lists. Again, totally illegal in Europe. Most of these sunscreen chemicals and every single cheap sunscreen, you go down Walmart, you go down to whatever store, you look at the cheap sunscreens, they all have oxybenzone or 4-methylbenzylene camphor or benzophenone, one of these benzophenone chemicals. So it's pervasive, man. It's tough. And it's, you know, honestly, get these natural products. They're out there. They're available. It's not that hard to find them without the artificial fragrances, you know, with the laundry detergent that's natural. And it's worth that little extra money, I think, because
that's for your life.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You ever consider doing a movie on this stuff? It seems like, you know, this is the type of thing I'd flip on Netflix and we get massive traction. I mean, you get ridiculous things on Netflix, like What the Health, like blowing up the nation.
Right.
And so, I mean, something like this that was actually intelligently formulated could probably change the scope of, you know, what of a lot of people's lives, but also of industry, right? If you actually lean on industry a little bit and create a little bit of awareness, it may actually, I mean, and I say that to everybody, like, you know, as far as organic foods, do you need to buy organic? Of course not. But buying organic is like, you know, speaking with your dollar, right? It's voting with your dollar and saying, if the more I buy organic, the more you must produce organic, and the less we're going to produce conventionally produced things with, you know, astrazine and all these other herbicides, pesticides. So
yeah, 100%. Yeah. I mean, if somebody else was doing a video, I would do it, but I'm not going to start something like that.
Too much work and definitely a long project. But I mean, I'll tell you what, there's probably few people in the whole country who could do, you know, this type of extensive conversation and deep dive into estrogen with the book already done. It's probably a pretty easy low hanging fruit for you, man. That would definitely shift the space of the United States anyways. But
yeah,
I've got a few movie producers who listen to the show, man. So maybe they'll reach out to you.
If they do, I'm on board all the way. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Awesome.
I mean, I have so many things going on with the DNA analysis, and you know, I'm studying stem cells at the Mayo Clinic and epigenetics and how they, and you know, one of the reasons I'm interested in stem cells is because these chemicals change our stem cells. They change the marks on the DNA on the stem cells, and that stays in your body. I think one of the reasons we have so much of these gut health problems is because we're screwing up our gut stem cells, and that's staying with people for years and years, decades. I mean,
how do we do that?
There's so many things. Well, these chemicals, inflammation, you know, bad gut bacteria. There's a lot of things and a lot of aspects to stem cells. But you know, I'm just saying, I'm interested in so many things.
I get it.
Yeah,
it's hard to put all your eggs in one basket. What are you most excited about right now, as far as health optimization and longevity? What's your greatest area of focus? I know we talked about epigenetics and DNA. What aspect of that, if that is the most interesting and exciting one for you right now?
Yeah, I think modulating our epigenetics is probably one of the most up and coming interesting areas. Now, part of the problem is we don't have a cheap way to sequence epigenetics yet. Like, we don't have the 23andMe of epigenetics. So you can't just go in and say, hey, I want my epigenetics done for $100 and, you know, and kind of track that. But in the future we will, you know, and that's coming.
Can you tell me what, I know you talked about marks. Is that literally the physically what is happening? So when I hear about epigenetics, we understand it's the genetic expression of a gene, the physical expression, or is that literally something that's measurable? Like we can physically see these marks on the DNA?
Yep. So you can do it one way, which is to look at how much protein is being made, right? But that's really tricky. Like, it requires Western blotting and measuring proteins, which requires mass spectrometry, real expensive stuff, real tricky. The better way to do it is just look at the DNA, basically sequence DNA and look at those marks. Usually they're methylations. Methylations are the easiest to look at. So that's the most studied. And that's literally like a methyl group, which is a CH3, you know, carbon and three hydrogens. It's a methyl group directly on your DNA. And so that's pretty easy to quantify, you know, how many methyl marks. And then those methylation marks change how enzymes interact with the DNA and make that protein. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's tricky to simplify that stuff, but, you know, I mean, there's other marks too. Like, there's marks on the histones, which package the DNA. There's acetylations, there's sumulations, there's ubiquitinations, you know, there's all these different marks, and it gets really complicated really fast. But usually when scientists are talking about quantifying epigenetics, like sequencing epigenetics, they're just looking at methyl marks.
Very, very interesting.
And those change.
Yeah.
Those change. Yeah. And you can use like B vitamins, change them in positive ways. One of the reasons Rhonda Patrick and others are so interested in sulforaphane from broccoli sprouts is that changes your epigenetics in a positive way. You know, and that's just going to grow and grow. Like, in the near future, we're just going to find more and more positive modulators of epigenetics, things that improve your epigenetics. And again, that's a long-term investment. That's your kids, you know, that's the health of your kids.
Yeah. That was the next question I wanted to ask. Are any of these, and you brought up sulforaphane, or any of these supplements, you know, sulforaphane, DIM, calcium deglucurate, even fiber supplements, are they things that you think are worthwhile additions to someone's diet to start potentially affecting epigenetics or affecting xenoestrogen removal from the body?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the best way to get rid of estrogens is to avoid them. So for those, you know, obviously I talked about the sauna, and we all have estrogens in our fat cells, especially if you haven't been avoiding these chemicals. So get in the sauna, get them out. But once you get them out, avoid them. But yeah, bad gut bacteria, they change your epigenetics. So you want, you know, you want a healthy gut. And I mean, that's such an ambiguous thing to say, because what does that mean? Well, that's pretty individualized. It's complicated. But, you know, if you hear about healthy gut, and, you know, there's ways to measure that. There's, you know what I mean? Like, I'm getting down in a rabbit hole maybe when just by mentioning that, but that can change your epigenetics. How your bacteria interact with your own cells changes your epigenetics. Yeah, there's, you know, there's a bunch of supplements. I mentioned the biggest ones, the most established ones, but again, that's going to be time sensitive because they're just going to be coming out in floods soon. I usually avoid DIM, which is diindolmethane, which people use to lower their estrogen. And the reason I avoid that is because it varies so much on an individual basis. Sometimes it acts like estrogen in your body. It's so dose dependent. And it's complicated, but it has to do with the way our estrogen receptors decrease as we have more estrogen. It's called negative feedback. Yep. So DIM, diindolmethane, it can actually increase the amount of estrogen in your body. Certain studies have shown, again, it's really dose dependent and it's really tricky. So for the average person, that's, you know, I mean, you can tinker with it. You can do biohacking and things to play around with that. But I usually just tell people to avoid that one. But, you know, anything, anytime you see an article or a new substance that changes your epigenetics, I'd be interested in that article, you know, in the future. And vitamin C, by the way, I should have mentioned that one. That's a real positive epigenetic regulator. So, I mean, you know, who's not taking vitamin C, right? But but it's a good one.
Is it predominantly, you know, a lot of listeners are familiar with methylation pathways. Is it predominantly, you know, is the broad stroke statement, you know, taking methylation support adequately going to improve somebody's, you know, health or their methylation pathways? Is that going to positively influence epigenetic expression?
Yeah, that's a great question. A great way to think about it, because the problem is there's a lot of pseudoscience with methylation, and people are, it's just like testosterone, you know, like if you look up, you know, like how micronutrients impact your testosterone, there's a million articles online about manganese and about zinc and about whatever mineral and how that impacts. But then if you look at the actual science research, there's, you know, almost none. Or it's the opposite of what people are saying. You know, some of these micronutrients, they lower your testosterone.
Right.
You know, it's mind blowing to me because I always assumed they would just increase your testosterone. But, you know, and then I started digging into that. And so, you know, I don't know, like the methylation stuff, it's such a young field that it's open to a lot of pseudoscience. A lot of people are jumping in and throwing in their opinions on it and calling it science. But my hunch is that, yeah, it's probably improving your epigenetics. The bigger way to do it is hormones, you know, balancing your sex hormones. There's no question that is going to positively balance your epigenetics.
Now, Dr. J, the framing of the podcast is living your greatest life in your greatest body. Knowing that, what are the three things you would tell our listeners to guide them down the right path?
Wow. Greatest life. And yeah, I mean, I think deadlifting is way up there.
Awesome. Good answer. Yeah.
I mean, you can't go wrong because you're activating probably more muscles than any other single movement pattern. You're lifting heavy. Most people's genetics indicate they should be lifting heavy. And I mean, obviously some people have problematic knees or arthritis or this or that, you know, but for the most part, figure out a way to deadlift. Start with an empty bar. You know, use the proper form. Don't arch your back. You know, keep your shoulders in there where they're supposed to be. But deadlift, you know, talk about balancing your hormones. That's number one. Number two, I would probably say to get into audiobooks.
Yeah.
You know, and crank out at least a book per week. I mean, that's kind of what I go for. And it just, you learn so much.
What are three of your favorites?
Oh, three of my favorite books. Right now, one of my favorites is that stem cell book by Neil Reardon down in Panama. He does a good job with that. I'm only about halfway through it. I can't remember what it's called, but you know, it's his own. It's I don't know. It's just a boring title like stem cells or something.
We'll find it and post in the show notes for sure. Now, I want to ask you about stem cells because it's been a controversial topic. We had somebody on recently who's a little bit controversial around stem cells, and I'd love to learn more about it. But I'll let you finish the question and maybe dig a little deeper into stem cells.
Well, with the books, I mean, stem cell book, Neil Reardon, awesome book. Number two, Tripping Over the Truth, Metabolic Theory of Cancer. Love that book. It has to do with, you know, not feeding cancers with the sugars, mm-hmm. how your mitochondria, you know, gets shunted, you know, these sugars basically don't get burned by your mitochondria in the case of cancer. It's complicated, but great book. Number three would be a tie between so many books and so many contexts. Yesterday, I was just recommending Fat for Fuel by Dr. Mercola to somebody because somebody I was doing consulting for because of their specific genetics. And I think that's a powerful, you know, prescription is to look at your genetics and then say, this book is really beneficial in your case, you know, and that varies a lot. So it helps to just have that big library of books that you can pull from, you know, you can pull from.
Man, if there was a resource out there and if you're the one to create it, you'd be very well off. It's just like, hey, man, here's your genetics, input your genetic code and outcomes, follow this diet. That can't be that complicated. There's got to be a limited number of SNPs influencing, you know, which diet you should be most beneficial for you. And then
that would be cool software.
Yeah. I mean, I would be the first one to subscribe to it, right?
Oh, me too. And you know, and I probably could do it, could already do that right now. But you know, I'm not a computer guy. I'm not a coding guy, but yeah, I mean, that's probably what I would say with the third book is there's just too many options for me to choose.
do you think that there's a larger predisposition to being fat, you know, more suited for a fat diet, high fat diet?
Do I think you get fat from a high fat diet mostly? No. Is that what you're asking?
No, sorry. Do you think there's a greater predisposition as far as most people to being better suited for a high fat diet?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, without a question. I mean, our brains function better, you know, and you know, what kind of carbs you're eating is a big factor, of course, but I think in general, definitely. And nobody is suited for eating a lot of refined sugar. You know, there's a lot of principles that are just, you know, just so obvious and so ubiquitous from person to person. But yeah, I mean, the reason high fat is so good, and you know, I mentioned Tripping Over the Truth. It's because, you know, if you eat sugar, your cells don't need to use the mitochondria to make energy. They can literally just make pyruvate and turn that into lactic acid. That happens outside of the mitochondria. When you utilize your mitochondria, the pyruvate gets shuttled into the mitochondria and then gets burned through this process called the citric acid cycle. And it uses oxygen and it cranks out a lot more energy and ATP. But here's the thing about fat: when you burn fat, you know, your cells have to use the mitochondria. They have to use oxygen. There's no other way to do it. It's called beta oxidation. And so it's a lot healthier because there's literally no way that, you know, that you can burn it in the same way you burn sugar outside of the mitochondria. And it's, you know, massive amounts of ATP from burning fat. So it's more efficient. It's cleaner, you know, it's a cleaner form of energy. So yeah, that's just the way our body is designed. And not to mention every single cell in your body has fat droplets all around it called phospholipids, you know, but I think the problem is most of the fats in our culture are just oxidized and they're not good quality fats, you know, like these vegetable oil, these seed oils. I don't even want to call them vegetable oils because they're not really vegetable.
Right.
But like these oils that are coming from seeds like canola, like even grape seed, you know, like they get really oxidized sitting around and then people are heating them up, which makes it even worse. And, you know, our cells have to utilize those to make the membranes, every cell in our body. And yeah, it's pretty disruptive. So burn fat, you know, the fats you're burning, super important, the fats you're eating, but in general, fats are awesome.
Now, this may be difficult to answer, but knowing what you've just said, do you feel that animal sources are our best option for fat in many instances?
Yes, except for the fruit oils. I like the oils that come from fruits like coconuts or avocados. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan. And But other than that, yeah, I think animal fats, like especially grass fed butter, you know, yeah, super healthy. If unfortunately we don't really eat brain as a culture, but I'm sure that's probably super healthy too, because that's mostly DHA.
Right.
That's mostly omega-3 fatty acid. So yeah, but
what percent is,
yeah,
go ahead.
No, that's all. I mean, I was just going to say the problem is all the marketing is all the marketing and the money is behind the vegetable fats, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what percentage of your current diet is from fats? Do you measure it, or is it just pretty, go by?
Well, mostly I go by how I feel, but right now I'm in ketosis. I'm doing the keto diet again. I haven't done it for a year, so I'm just kind of due, and I do that for about a month, and I just kind of go by how I feel in general, but I eat high fat, high protein, somewhat high protein and low-ish carbs, except for in the evenings. I do eat a lot of carbs in the evenings in general, but yeah, I'm keto right now. That's 80% fat by carb, by calorie percentage.
Yep.
And I'm doing 15% protein. It's really high. I mean, just crazy amounts of fat. I'm doing legit keto, you know, not half-assing it.
And now, how do you notice your performance is when you're on a ketogenic diet? Do you know any, obviously you're a deadlifter. Do you notice any deterioration in your?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. No, my lifting drops because I'm not fat adapted right now. And I mean, if I change my diet in any way, shape or form, you know, I tested out the carnivore diet. It doesn't work for me. I predicted that with my DNA, but
what was your feeling why it didn't work?
My lifting dropped way off. I gave it a good month. Mm-hmm. I was getting lightheaded. Like I just was not able to focus. I wasn't feeling good. You know, my body was saying hell no, but with the keto, my body says hell no for a little bit. And then it comes out of that. And I make sure that I get plenty of potassium so I don't get that keto flu, but you know, it still declines it drops off some of my lifting and things. So I take it a lot easier in the gym, but once I snap out of that after a couple of weeks, it starts to increase and I feel great. Mostly I do it for the mental boost.
Yeah. It's incredible how well your brain functions. Now, most of your potassium coming from, avocado.
Yeah. Yeah. I eat a ton of avocado. I literally supplement it, which you have to be careful because if you overdose potassium, that's super bad, but which most doctors would love to tell you about. But yeah, I mean, because it's easy to overdose potassium if you're taking it just straight up as like a powder supplement. But yeah, that's a good point. Avocados are great and I eat a ton of those, you know.
Do you think obviously it sounds like that's the case. Do you think that's the primary reason for that adaptation issue, like the quote-unquote keto flu?
I think so, but I haven't done enough researching to know for sure. But that's what I think based on what I've seen, yeah.
Super interesting. Now, the one last question I wanted to dive into was the stem cells. So
we're hearing
different things. I put out a podcast recently. I actually had people reach out to me and say, hey, some of the information on your podcast was not accurate. And it was coming from someone who claimed to be an authority on this and probably is an authority on this. But it seems like there's two sides to this argument, right? There's the people saying stem cells are the fountain of youth and the cure-all for most human disease. And there's the people on the other side saying, we know nothing about these things. These could be causing massive amounts of harm and actually being pro-cancer. Yep. Where do you stand on that debate?
Yeah, I think the best way to break it down is to say there's kind of the regenics stem cell group, which is, you know, the bone marrow stem cells, the adult stem cells. And then there's kind of the adipose derived mesenchymal stem cells, like the Neil Reardon group, and the US Stem Cell Lab and things like that. The difficulty, the complication in my mind is people eat such different diets that if you take stem cells out of one person, they're going to vary dramatically compared to the stem cells of another person, how healthy they are and things like that. And most scientists aren't factoring that in. It's just as frustrating as this estrogen research. Because, you know, when people are studying xenoestrogens in mice or rabbits or whatever, well, when they're studying fats, right? Like they're studying vegetable oil and they're comparing it to lard or something like that.
Right.
They're storing the fats in plastics, including BPA. But if it's not BPA, it's full of phthalates again. And then they end up studying the effects of estrogen and then they blame that on the fats, right? Like there's all these conflicting issues and most scientists they either stick their head in the sand on that stuff or they don't even know about it because, you know, they're so narrow focused on one thing that they haven't gone out of their own discipline and really looked into some of the context. But, and I think stem cells is the same thing. It's like, are you taking it out of a male or a female? Because
what if I'm taking it out of myself and putting it back into my harvesting and putting it back into myself? Is there any negative in your eyes? Is there any negative effect to that?
No. And I think the FDA is supporting that. The idea that the FDA right now, their stance is basically, yeah, there's no negative effect, but there's no positive effect. That's kind of what they say. I'm at liberty kind of to go a little farther than that, I think. You know, like, I think if I was within the FDA, I probably couldn't even, you know, I'd have to take the party line. But I think they're super beneficial in a lot of different ways. But again, like, how healthy are you, Ben? You know what I mean? Right. Like, what are you eating when you took them out? And then the bigger question is, are you growing up the stem cells and making more of them? Are they alive? Are they healthy? Are the stem cells coming out of you healthy? You know, because if you take some fat out and you just spin it down and then re-inject the stem cells into your knee or something, they're not going to stay in your knee. You know what I mean? So sometimes if your knee is signaling that it needs help and it needs stem cells, yeah, they're going to be there. They're going to secrete molecules that help your knee, but it's really dependent on the stem cells and how healthy they are, which stem cells you've selected, how you've selected them, what you're growing them up in. You know, it's complicated.
Yeah.
And that's what I think in America right now, most people are trying to make it into a drug, you know, like a drug culture, like a pharmaceutical culture where they want patents. They want to kind of corner the market and make it so they've got the technology and this is the only way to do it. And this is the, you know, the massive $1 billion clinical trial, you know. And unfortunately, that's the direction the U.S. is going, where it's like you've got to do a full-blown multi-billion-dollar clinical trial in order to get this stuff to market now. And that's frustrating for me because I think there's a lot more benefit there and I think we should be tapping into that quicker. But
yeah, because nobody can compete with the pharmaceutical companies on that, right? Who's got $1 billion kicking around, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's one of the ways they utilize that technique to eliminate the competition. But it just hinders the speed of the whole process, you know. And there's massive benefits from stem cells in a lot of different contexts, but just teasing out all the benefits. And then, like, for example, I went to a talk recently. It was the Mayo, it was at the Mayo Clinic. It was the New York Giants medical doctor. His last name is Rodeo. Cool guy. I talked to him after the talk for a while. I walked him over from building to building and he gave a good summary of the research that's out there. And one of his points was like, if they take this type of stem cell and inject it into your shoulder, it works great. But if they take that same stem cell and inject it into your knee, it doesn't do anything, you know, or vice versa. Or what about rotator cuff versus a different kind of shoulder injury or whatever, you know, like all these different types of injuries, you have different effects. And in my opinion, people are eating so much refined sugar and all this stuff. They're messing up their stem cells so badly. It's like, you know, you got to find some good stem cells before you even want to do those studies, you know. It's tough.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that was one of the things we talked about was obviously just the health of the organism, right? If you're a healthy person and you're probably young and you're exercising, your stem cells are going to be vigorous and probably very effective and useful. And if conversely, if you're a smoker, if you're unhealthy, or if you're someone who eats a lot of refined carbs, like you say, stem cells may be completely useless.
Yeah. And they secrete different things when they're healthy versus unhealthy, you know, and they home differently, you know, it's tough. And honestly, I'm still kind of, you know, trying to decipher all the research myself and formulate a deeper, you know, more thoughtful opinion of it because, you know, I mean, that's one of the reasons I'm here at the Mayo Clinic, frankly, because I want to know, you know, and I want to know the depth of it. I don't want just somebody to tell me what they think, you know, as much as I love Neil Reardon's book, you know, it's the way he frames it and the way he thinks about it. I want to know. You know, myself, I want to dig into it and formulate my own really biased opinions.
I love the fact that it shows me that you're living a really authentic life by the fact that you've chosen three books that are the ones that you chose are very, very specific to what you do. It tells me you're really passionate about what you do, Dr. J. So I'm truthfully grateful And I hope to have you back on numerous times as you continue to evolve your understanding and conversation around epigenetics and DNA, because that's super interesting. And I think that that may hold, you know, along with stem cells, that may hold the key to our ultimate longevity and life optimization over time.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. And I have to say, like, I learned a lot from you over the years watching your YouTube and things way back, even before I, you know, was into writing books and all this stuff. So I appreciate that.
I had no idea. Well, that's, I'm truly grateful for that. Thank you.
Yeah, man, I was about 150 pounds when I started, when I was doing my PhD, and I got allergies and acid reflux and all this. And I finally said, you know what, I got to start hitting the gym and working out, because I was studying all the time and I wasn't healthy. Frankly, my health was just dropping off, and I didn't know anything. I just went in the gym an hour every other day. And I just said, I'm just going to go an hour every other day. And I had no clue what I was doing. And it was awkward. It was weird, but I just did it, just pounded through it. And then I got into it and started learning. And man, you were at the forefront, man. You had some awesome stuff. I remember your calf workout.
Everyone seems to remember the calf workout.
All kinds of cool stuff. Yeah. So yeah, I appreciate that. And thank you
very much. That's great to know. I'm glad I can help. And you're certainly helping me. So thank you very much. All right, man.
Yeah. Comes back around, huh?
All right, Dr. J, have a great day.
All right, you too.
And that's a wrap, ladies and gentlemen. How did you enjoy the episode with Dr. Anthony J? Obviously, we gave you guys a ton of takeaways that you can start applying to your life right now. One of the things I want to add is I think the number one thing is removing the stimulus, and you guys get that, and removing the stimulus of how much estrogen is going in, because you can do all the detoxing you want, but if you're not removing the stimulus going in, you're in big, big trouble. So that starts, I think, with water. And we're also focused on how much water is going in, and not just we should be focused on how good quality the water is that's going in, right? So it's not just like, hey, I want to consume 2 gallons of water a day, but I'm drinking it from these crappy plastic jugs that are literally like toxic estrogen bombs going into my body. Switch away from that stuff. Get yourself a stainless steel bottle, fill it up at a filter at home, and don't ever drink from plastic. Like 2 to 3 times a year, you'll catch me drinking from plastic by accident when I forget my bottle in the gym and I don't have anything else around. Other than that, I just would rather not drink, to be honest. And as much as we're consumed with how much water we need to consume, it's so much better to pay attention to the quality of what's going into your body. And you guys know I preach that daily. It's like, it's not just about the quantity. Obviously, quantity matters at some level, but quality is so much more important. And I hope that's a big takeaway for all of you guys. The quality of your food is going to determine what's in it, what else is in it, right? So it's not just the macros that's in the food. It's also the micronutrients. It's also the pesticides and herbicides that have been added. It's also the things like the phthalates, the parabens, and the BPA that are literally all over our foods, these herbicides like estrazine that Dr. G talks about that is just destroying our insides and preventing us from truthfully living a great life. If you're having a problem with your body composition, if you're having a problem with your mind, these things are very, very big concerns. And I'm trying to work with Dr. J to get him to create a service to help you guys actually understand what nutrition plan you should be following. And maybe that's something we come up with in the future. But this guy had such great information. Everything he said was absolutely in line with what I believe to be true. And so many people are focused on, hey, Ben, how do I improve my testosterone? Or, hey, Ben, how do I build more muscle? And you guys know that what you do in the gym is massively important. But if you really want to build a tremendous amount of muscle, if you want to have higher testosterone, if you don't want to have a better sex drive, you got to pay attention to estrogen and cortisol. And so you know my latest conversation is everything around balancing the parasympathetic nervous system and bringing down cortisol. And there needs to be a huge synergy there with regulating and removing estrogens. So if we're meant to have 20 nanograms per liter, and we've got 3,000 nanograms per liter in, you know, something like water, that's absolutely unacceptable. So hopefully you guys start to pay attention to how much estrogen is in here. As far as the filter that I'm using, I use the MultiPure, which is something I've used for probably 6 or 7 years as being known for removing the greatest amount of pharmaceuticals, which is another concern in our water supply. And there's, and Dr. J mentions the Berkey, which we're going to link to in the show notes. And there's a lot of other ones out there. There's something called the Zero Filter, which we've been shown to have literally nothing left in the water, which you could argue is good or bad. And he mentions just any type of carbon filter, any type of charcoal filter can do probably just as good as most of these things. And the price is variable. And now there's actually other things you can do to your water for additional benefits. If you guys haven't listened to the podcast with Hans Eng and Rowena Gates, they talk a lot about structured water, which I think is another level that we want to actually dive back into talking about, because I actually was really listening to that podcast today. It's incredible how much they talk about the positive influence on genetic expression and the prevention of aging. So if you haven't listened to that one already, I suggest you roll back and check out Hans Eng and Rowena Gates podcast. And as always, I'm just here to support you guys living an awesome life. I'm trying to create an awesome life for myself and continue to live a happy, joyous life in an amazing body that you absolutely love. Have an amazing day.